Welcome to Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana basketball news and discussion, brought to you by the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Join me live at assemblycall.com every Thursday night and immediately following every IU game for our live IU postgame show. And visit insidethehall.com for complete coverage of IU basketball and to join the discussion in the Inside the Hall premium forum. On this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, it is time to start our off-season tour around the Big Ten so that we can all get to know Indiana's conference opponents for the upcoming season a little bit better. And given what's happened this offseason, no better place to start than with the Michigan Wolverines, who obviously lost their top three scorers. They have a new coach. Just a lot going on in Ann Arbor after what has been one of the most successful runs of Michigan basketball ever. You know, what is Michigan basketball going to look like now? We bring in one of our favorite recurring guests, Dylan Burkhart, who runs the site umhoops.com, to get his insight on the Wolverines and what he expects from them. And then we also spent some time talking about the Big Ten at large, Dylan's thoughts about Indiana. He picked Indiana to win the Big Ten last year. What is he thinking this year? Is he going to overcorrect, or is he still buying in to the Archie Miller Hoosiers? We talk about that, talk about Big Ten recruiting, and a lot more. As always, just a fun, wide-ranging conversation with Dylan. So all of that coming on this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink. All right, so Dylan, to start this, I want to take you back to January 18th, 2019, because at that moment in time, Michigan basketball kind of felt like the surest thing in the Big Ten. They're 17-0, they're ranked number two in the country, they'd made the national title game, won the Big Ten tournament the year before, and John Beilein had truly cemented his reputation as one of the best X's and O's coaches, one of the best player developers in the country. But in an example of how quickly things can change in college basketball, here we are 6 short months later. Michigan now kind of feels like one of the bigger question marks in the conference. They lose their top three scorers, and most importantly, Beilein, who had famously never been an assistant at any level, is now coaching the Cleveland Cavaliers, while Juwan Howard, who famously had never been a head coach at any level, is the Michigan coach. So to start, because there's a lot to break down, obviously, what has it been like covering Michigan during what has certainly been one of the more unexpected and interesting 18-month periods in the program's history?
Yeah, it's certainly been a whirlwind. Even if you just look at the end of the regular season, it was a very kind of disappointing end to the year for Michigan, right? You lost to Michigan State to lose the regular season, lost to Michigan State to lose the Big Ten tournament, and then got bounced in the NCAA tournament. But even if you're looking at that point, you're saying, well, Michigan is going to have all these guys back. They're going to do this. Instead, you lose three guys to the NBA and your head coach to the NBA. I mean, certainly a whirlwind. Beilein leaving felt, it was a surprise in the sense that it happened basically in a flash. There was no long, drawn out, back and forth sort of courtship like there was with the Detroit Pistons the year before. But at the same time, you're dealing with a situation where Beilein had gone through that courtship a year ago and had clearly been intrigued by the idea of coaching in the NBA. So it shouldn't have really been a huge surprise that the first time he actually had a chance to sign an offer to coach in the NBA, that he took that offer. So it's been a whirlwind. Nothing like a little coaching search, as I'm sure you guys can remember, dealing with the Archie Miller search. And now we're here in a spot where one of the most kind of consistent, steady programs is just a question mark, is really the way to put it. You have so many moving pieces and really nothing much to go on, because as you said, Juwan Howard's never even been a head coach.
So what have we learned about Juwan Howard so far, and what, you know, what if anything right now do you expect from a Juwan Howard coach team without much to go on?
Honestly, we don't really know anything about what kind of style he wants to coach. We know that he put a staff together with Phil Martelli, Saadi Washington, and Howard Eisley. Saadi Washington is the lone holdover from Michigan's previous staff, so he can obviously bring some continuity. We don't really know what Juwan Howard wants to run. Obviously, he was a kind of a original stretch big, but more of a post-focused guy, right? So is that going to be something that he brings, which John Beilein rarely, if ever, would throw the ball into the post? Is he going to bring an NBA-style offense? We really don't know. I mean, he was asked in his opening press conference what kind of style he'd basically coach, and he said, we're still trying to figure that out, and said that his players are going to help him figure that out. So we don't know. We won't really know until November, until we see it on the court, because even a coach that you know a lot about, they're going to say X, Y, and Z in the offseason, and it's not always the case.
By the way, you mentioned Phil Martelli. What a great offseason development for the Moving Screen Pod to have Phil Martelli on staff at Michigan, huh?
Yeah, we've got too much Philadelphian in Arbor already, it seems.
If you, by the way, if you don't know that reference, Dylan co-hosts the Moving Screen Pod with our buddy Brendan Quinn, who writes for The Athletic. He obviously from Philadelphia, so that connection with Phil Martelli. If you don't subscribe to the Moving Screen Podcast, you definitely should. It's good Michigan, Michigan State talk, and also some good general Big Ten talk too. So just wanted to get that plug in there for you.
Thank you for the plug.
So Dylan, next season's Michigan roster is going to look a lot different. Of course, you've got Iggy Brasdagas, who went pro, Jordan Poole, and then obviously Charles Matthews, who unfortunately is going to start off his professional career rehabbing from an injury. Obviously, Michigan loses those three guys, and they picked up a pretty significant commitment recently with the brother of Mo Wagner. I don't know how he's, is it Franz?
Franz Wagner, yep.
Franz, okay. That's a pretty big pickup. I mean, what are kind of your general expectations for Michigan going into next season? And from a personnel standpoint, do you feel like this is a team that has the talent now that can be in that upper echelon of the Big Ten, or is it still to be determined based on how Juwan Howard is going to fit everything together?
There's definitely a to-be-determined aspect just with the coaching element. But what you do have some pretty sure things and then a lot of question marks. You have Xavier Simpson and John Teske, who are one of the best kind of guard-center pick-and-roll duos and also defensively. And just about any team in the country would want to build their team around that duo. Beyond that, though, there's not a lot of sure things. Isaiah Livers is a guy that most people will expect to kind of have a breakout year. He was very efficient off the bench last year, started some games. That's a really good trio. But everyone else that Michigan is going to look for to get minutes just hasn't proven that they can get it done at a high level in the Big Ten. And that doesn't mean they can't, but it means that a lot of freshmen, a lot of sophomores who haven't played big roles are going to have to be called upon and see what they can get done. Go ahead.
I'm just curious more specifically on Franz Wagner, because you've done a lot on your site, kind of breaking down video, looking at his numbers. And what's, you know, for those who are unfamiliar with him, he's going to be coming into the Big Ten, maybe not a name that people across the conference know, but those of us who kind of study rosters know that he's going to be a big piece of Michigan's team next year. What's kind of his background? And obviously, his brother played at Michigan, so that's a connection for them to land. But what his basketball background, what is it, and what kind of player do you expect him to be next season?
Yeah, so he's more of a wing than his brother, who was more of a big man. But he's also been growing and is supposedly up around 6'9". So he's basically a big wing. He played for primarily the 2 and the 3 over with his club team in Germany. And he was playing at a senior level with his club, which a lot of times you'll see, like his brother came over as a youth player and he rarely got any minutes with the senior team. Franz Wagner was playing basically rotation minutes with the second best team in Germany. So he's very experienced. He's also only 17. He'll turn 18 in August. He is a guy that most kind of European basketball people thought should stay there because he had everything he would need there, decided that it was a better option to come over to college and kind of follow in his brother's footsteps. He's basically, at his core, he's a guy who plays off the catch. He can shoot and he can attack a closeout and drive to the basket. That's basically where his game stands now, which works really well for what Michigan has because they just need guys to space the floor around that Simpson-Teske ball screen duo.
You know, you've mentioned Teske, Simpson, Livers, and Wagner. Beyond those four, who are maybe one or two guys that you're looking for next season? You know, if Michigan is going to reach its potential, you know, and be, you know, a tournament team again and be one of the, you know, top three or four teams in the conference, who are maybe one or two guys you're looking at and saying that this guy has to move forward and do this?
So Brandon Johns is one guy that Indiana fans will probably be familiar with because he really played his only really great game last year against Indiana. He played largely out of position last year at the five, and so he'll have a lot higher expectations if he can kind of emerge as a stretch four prospect that he was really highly regarded as. He's one guy. Eli Brooks will probably play a key role. But Eli Brooks has really struggled to shoot or really even look for his offense while he's been at Michigan. So I could see his spot kind of up in the air. Those are the two guys you'd probably look for early on. But really, anyone that has a chance to get, it's basically a clean slate, right? You have all these guys who didn't play rotation minutes, and they're going to have a new coach to prove themselves in front of.
I just have a small request. Can we not mention last year's IU Michigan games ever again? Like, ever? Because easily two of the worst moments of a season filled with bad moments for IU last year.
I think the last time we had Dylan on was actually before the Michigan game at IU. And I think Dylan famously predicted that he thought IU would win. And it was like the closest, it was like the furthest thing from IU winning that game. It was like the minute the ball tipped,
yeah,
you only had to watch about 20 seconds to realize that it was going to be a complete annihilation. That was
terrible. Jeez.
That was really a bad game. I mean, Michigan didn't even play that well, and they won by 20-something. That was the thing about it.
Both of those games had terrible starts for Indiana, I believe, right? Wasn't the game at
right.
Assembly Hall was the one that was
17-0.
Like nothing or something like that.
Yeah, the one in Ann Arbor was actually better in terms of just competitiveness because Michigan got out to a pretty good lead. And then I think in the second half, it got to like within seven. So it was at least interesting. But
Indiana outscored on the last 30 minutes of that game, I think.
Yeah, I think
such a bad
start. The two worst games last year, I think, were that game and the Nebraska game at home. Those were kind of like the nail in the coffin. And then they rose out of the coffin maybe for a few weeks there in late February, but then quickly Ohio State put them back in at the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, so. And Dylan was a believer in the Hoosiers last year too. We'll get to that. I can't wait to see where you think Indiana's going to finish this year.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So I want to ask you about recruiting because, you know, John Beilein famously, you know, Michigan wasn't getting McDonald's All-Americans, but they would get a lot of really solid four-star players that fit the system, and John Beilein would develop them and, you know, craft this offense and defense around them, and guys really seemed to, you know, kind of maximize their potential. But from other coaches who have come, you know, from the NBA to college and had success, we've seen Fred Hoiberg really go the grad transfer JUCO type route. Penny Hardaway obviously is now, you know, just recruiting every single five-star out there. What do you expect kind of the roster composition and recruiting strategy to be from Juwan Howard? Do you think it'll be more targeting a lot of those five-star guys and, you know, dialing up LeBron James on the phone to talk to him? Or is the Michigan program going to be a lot different just because, you know, he's not going to be able to recruit the way that Beilein did? Do you expect that to be a lot different?
It certainly appears that way right now, just based on the offers that he's handed out over the last month. And obviously he's playing catch up a little bit and working with trying to go after some of the prospects that Michigan had already prioritized. But he's handing out offers to five-star kids before they've come on campus. Like Beilein used to stick to these very rigid rules, right? You have to visit, you have to have your transcripts sent in, you have to do all these things before you can get an offer. Juwan Howard basically has probably handed out 10 offers to class of 2020 and 21 prospects, and I would say they're all top 35, top 40 prospects. So on one hand, you could say, well, he hasn't had a lot of time to evaluate, so he's going to go after, I guess, the top first. But it certainly seems like the approach is going to be go out and get the most talented prospects out there and figure out the rest as you go, whereas Beilein was much more of a guy who would look for the perfect fits in his system and try to look for chances to develop them, stuff like that, kind of fill in the cracks, that certainly doesn't seem to be how Juwan Howard's operating now. He's going for the top, and we, I guess we have to see if he can sign those guys. It's kind of the key. Anyone can offer him.
You know, most people obviously remember Juwan Howard as a player playing for Michigan. Some of the, you know, the younger listeners may not, but he was a great player there in the early 90s for the Fab Five, which really, you know, revolutionized college basketball in a lot of ways. It's interesting, you know, for Indiana, whenever a job comes open, whether it's an assistant coaching job, a head coaching job, there's a vocal group of the fan base that wants an Indiana guy, that really feels like an Indiana guy should fill that role. And here we are at Michigan, and Michigan's got a Michigan man filling that role. Now, it's a little bit different because he's replacing a successful coach that no one would have wanted to get rid of. But how has that played, and how do you think Juwan Howard's history with Michigan will affect his success, if at all, moving forward?
So Michigan has all sorts of experience with this whole Michigan man concept, mostly on the football side of things, and that has gone to mixed results over time. I think obviously when you hire a guy who has ties to the university and is a quote unquote Michigan man, you're going to win the first few months, right? No one's going to look for a reason to be upset, but I think any head coach is going to be judged on his results, right? So that Michigan man luster, so to speak, only lasts so long, and it will depend on the actual product on the court. I don't know. At least as far as the basketball program, has not had a Michigan man. John Beilein was about as far from a Michigan man as you could get, and he was obviously worked out. So I don't think it really has to be a prerequisite. You're more just looking for the best coach at the time. In this case, Michigan's timing made it a little more difficult and made Juwan Howard kind of a perfect fit in that regard.
It's interesting you mentioned the timing, because that's exactly what I was going to ask you about in terms of the search. How big of a factor do you think the timing was in Juwan Howard landing the job? And do you think if it was I know it's obviously doesn't really matter, but hypothetically speaking, do you think the pool of candidates would have been different if Beilein would have left, you know, say right after the season instead of when he did?
I think the pool would have certainly been bigger, just as far as all the coaches who had taken new jobs in that 2-month period basically were off the grid. And those were a lot of kind of the up and coming mid majors, those sort of types. I don't think that the timing would have meant that Michigan goes out and hires some $5, $6, $7 million splashy coach either. I don't know that was ever really going to be in the budget, just based on kind of how Michigan operates. And I wouldn't have been surprised if it still came up as Juwan Howard, even if there was a bigger candidate pool at an earlier point in time.
The other interesting thing to me about Juwan Howard is that he has two sons that appear to be college basketball players, at least at the Division I level, one younger one that looks like could be a high major player. What is kind of the prognosis in terms of the older son? I think is the class of 2020 kid, Jace Howard, and then the 2022 kid. I saw Jed Howard was invited to the USA basketball minicamp later this month in Colorado Springs. So that to me indicates that he's at least somebody that's been identified by some of the national folks as a guy who's going to be a pretty good player. Is the older son someone you envision playing at Michigan, or is the talent there for that? And then what the younger son, what do you know about him at this point?
Yeah, so both of his kids play on the UIBL circuit, and he's this kind of like one of the reasons that people have pointed out that Howard already has some ties to grassroots basketball. They both won a state championship in Florida last year at the university school, playing alongside like Scotty Barnes and a lot. So he's very familiar with a lot of these big time targets. Jace Howard is more of a mid-major type of prospect right now. Wouldn't be surprised if maybe somehow he does end up in Michigan's class, just because they have a lot of scholarships and it could be a big group. Right now he seems like he kind of wants to go through the process and see what offers he gets on his own merit, so to speak. And he plays with the Mac Irvin Fire. Jet Howard is a much higher regarded prospect, as you said, probably like a fringe five-star in the class of 2020. I think he plays on one of the best, I guess it'd be 15 UIBL teams. I think it's like Knight Riders Elite. He should be a top target, and I would be pretty surprised if he doesn't eventually get offered and join the class. Juwan Howard also can go to USA Basketball grassroots events and watch his kids play, which is a little bit of an advantage as well during non-evaluation periods. So that could be something to watch play out as well.
So getting back to the current year's team for Michigan, what do you expect this year? I mean, I know it's hard to really know what to expect, but how do you, as we kind of transition also to talking about the Big Ten, where do you kind of place Michigan right now in terms of the hierarchy in the Big Ten for this upcoming season?
So before Franz Wagner committed over the last couple of weeks, I think I did a podcast and we said Michigan would finish around eighth in the league, which a lot of Michigan fans were a little upset about. I felt like they were at least one player short, probably two players short before adding Wagner. Now I feel like there's probably less pressure on getting three or four of those kind of unproven guys to break out, and maybe you only need one or two. And I would push them up more into what I would call, I guess, the third tier of the Big Ten, where I'm not sure. Like, I kind of see Michigan State stands alone, right? Everyone agree with that. I say Maryland, Ohio State, maybe even Illinois are kind of like the next tier of contenders. And then Michigan probably in that next kind of 4 to 7 group with everyone else. I don't really know how to sort those apart. So,
Obviously, last year, as we mentioned before, you were big on Indiana heading into the season. The Hoosiers did not live up to those expectations. Where do you place Indiana right now, looking at what the Hoosiers have coming back?
I'm going to overcorrect on Indiana. I'm not even looking for reasons to buy in any stock on Archie Island this year. I mean, what would you guys sell me on? I would say Indiana's in that, not the bottom, but like the 8, 9, 10, 11 range, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I mean, every time I do it, I probably have them around 7th, 8th, 9th, something like that. And that's, you know, generally viewing it with some optimistic glasses on. I mean, they've got some pieces, but they've got a lot of questions to answer. And that's the thing when you start looking at it. It's like, if this happens, if this happens, if this happens, but there's a lot of ifs. So I think a lot of Indiana fans are hoping that last year, pretty much everything that could go wrong did go wrong. So maybe this year, some of those things will go right. We'll see.
Yeah, the thing that's interesting to me right now, looking at, and really the only thing we have that to look at this point is, I like to look at Bart Torvik's site and kind of eyeball where he has all the teams at this point in time. And he's got Indiana, if you just kind of look at his rankings, I think 10th. The teams in front of them that I would say there's a chance that they would be better than. And there's a huge gap in his ranking between some of these teams. I don't know. Dylan, maybe you can kind of help me understand, or Jared too. Penn State at 20, that feels super ambitious to me, considering the fact that Penn State's never made the tournament under Pat Chambers, and I think they lost one of their best, you know, I know they lost Josh Reeves and another one of their guards, I believe, transferred to Iowa State, so I don't know how they're going to be better than what they were last year. Wisconsin, and maybe Bart's thrown in a little fairy dust because he's a Wisconsin guy, but they don't have Ethan Happ anymore, and to me that's significant loss. And the other team is Iowa, which we don't know next year, you know, what's going to be the kind of their rotation in terms of, is Jordan Bohannon going to be on the team anymore based on his offseason surgery? So those are the three teams I'm looking at and saying, scratching my head. And even Illinois at 14 to me seems a little bit.
But people are really high on Illinois. I'm not buying Illinois quite that much, but. Yeah,
Indiana swept Illinois last year, right? And Michigan State. So I'm not saying that they're going to anyway be in the same category as those teams, but Illinois up that high to me feels a little bit rich. So those are the four teams I'm looking at and saying, yeah.
Illinois is the team I'm irrationally high on this year,
just because of the guards. Or
I love the guards. I love Georgie, and I think that Underwood is a really good coach, and it's getting to a now or never point. So if this team's not good, that it's going to be a little bit messy, I think. I like Illinois a lot. I don't know about Purdue as a preseason top 10 team. I think they're a little overvalued.
What do you think about Penn State, Wisconsin, and Iowa? To me, those teams feel like they're a little high, at least on Bart's rankings.
Yeah, I definitely agree on Penn State. I'm never buying into Penn State until they prove me wrong, and I'll win that bet every time. Wisconsin will be a pain to play against, but I don't know that they really have, I guess, like a top 30 ceiling. I would not be shocked to see them drop. I guess I would question you guys, what's the reason that Indiana will overachieve, right? Like, what are the X factors that come together? I guess Jerome Hunter possibly being back would be one big one, but
Jerome Hunter's a big one. I think the 3-point shooting improving with not as many attempts being taken by Romeo and Juwan, and if the guards, you know, kind of step up, Rob Phinisee being healthy, I think is another one that people are banking on. And just the depth that Indiana has down low. I mean, they're not necessarily going to be able to play the style you'd want to play for modern college basketball, but if they can, you know, keep Deron Davis healthy and, you know, get some easy buckets down low, that inside outside game combined with what you hope is the third year of growth in the pack line defense, which you often see teams take a jump. I think though, that's kind of what people are banking on.
I'm not in the same optimistic.
No. He asked, what are the things that could happen? I'm not saying I think all of those things could happen, but if you are going to make the argument, I think that would be the argument that you make. Now you mentioned something interesting. You said, you know, you think Brad Underwood's a good coach and you're kind of, you know, that part of the reason why you're buying Illinois is you're believing in him. Now, Illinois has gone 26 and 39 in his first two seasons. You're not necessarily buying Indiana, and I know they lose two, you know, big players. What does that say about your belief in Archie Miller? Like, what do you think of him as a coach?
Very let down after last year. I don't think that you can completely sell stock on Archie Miller just because of how last year went. Even you look back on some old John Beilein teams where you have kind of a duo that's supposed to be good and things just don't quite go your way. It can look worse than it is in like under the lens of one season. Whereas you really could still kind of bounce back on track and kind of create some of that momentum again. I guess I'm really worried about how Indiana is going to get better offensively for a team that wasn't very good offensively and then loses a pro and a efficient senior in Juwan Morgan. I could see, I guess, some of the maybe you just shoot better because the guy who was shooting 20 whatever percent with a bum was his thumb, right?
Yeah.
Langford's thumb. So maybe I'll buy some of that, but I just have not been impressed, I guess, with any sort of big picture. Like the offense just doesn't seem like it should really be working better either. So that's what I'm most worried about for Archie, I would say.
You know, another interesting parallel between Michigan and Indiana, obviously Archie Miller is known as a defensive coach, and the program has taken big defensive strides in 2 years over where it was. And again, I think a lot of us who are optimistic are hoping that we'll see that take another jump this year. Michigan, for a while under John Beilein, obviously had great offenses, didn't play great defense. They brought in Luke Yaklich, and he really helped out the defense. And a lot of Indiana fans last year were clamoring, Archie needs to bring in, you know, an offensive guy, the offensive version of Yaklich. How important was that addition for John Beilein, and do you think that that's something that a coach like Archie Miller should consider doing?
So it was Billy Donlin before Yaklich who came in and sort of was the first defensive assistant. He was there for a year and then went to Northwestern. And I really think what it was about was Beilein accepting that he needs someone else to kind of dedicate time and attention just to defense and emphasize that side of the game more, which sounds pretty obvious or blatant, right? Like you should emphasize defense and maybe you'll be better at it. But that was really a big part of it. Yaklich obviously made a huge impact. At the same time, Michigan started Xavier Simpson, Charles Matthews for those 2 years when the defense was great. And they just happened to be, what, top three, top five defenders at their positions in college basketball. Defense is very much about the players that you have to work with. Even if, like, obviously, like, Yaklich is great. He's one of the most insane scouting guys, and he'd be watching film in the team hotel before a game, like just like all the time, right? He's completely locked in and the team definitely bought into that. But I don't know that you can just hire an offensive guru and say, here, run my offense. Like, what head coach isn't responsible for their own offense? Beeline had a very unique situation and Yaklić had a very unique resume that kind of worked out perfectly together. I'm going to guess that Yaklić will have more responsibilities than just defense at Texas this year because he doesn't want to be known as just the defensive assistant, and no head coach wants to be known as the head coach that can't run their own offense. So I don't really see, obviously you can bring in a sharp offensive coach who can help, but I don't think you'll ever see a high major head coach hire a offensive coordinator on their bench, so to speak.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things right now, and I'm interested to get your take on it. Indiana's got an assistant coaching opening, and a lot of people are debating who they should hire. Should it be somebody, and I've been pretty clear about what I think, what they should go for, but should they hire somebody who is more of an X's and O's guys or somebody that's can get recruits? And my stance has been, if you don't have talent, it doesn't matter really how much you coach them up to an extent. I mean, in a league like the Big Ten, if you don't have the horses, you're not going to win at the highest level. And the thing to me right now in terms of Indiana's recruiting is basically they haven't gotten a top 100 player from out of state in almost 2 years. When Jerome Hunter and Race Thompson committed in the summer of 2017. So I'm curious from your perspective, you talked about, you know, the offense not being what it needs to be. If you're Archie Miller, do you still look at this hire as you got to get somebody that can get players, or do you look at it more of from a schematic standpoint of we got to get somebody in that can help on the bench, or a combination of both?
So I don't know the ins and outs of Indiana's remaining staff, but I think it kind of depends on how the whole staff fits together. I know in the past, Beeline was very much a guy who would just kind of get the best coaches. And then, like, I don't think anyone that he hired was ever, oh, this guy's going to be my recruiter, so to speak. But recruiting is also, what, 70% of the job for an assistant coach. So you have to get guys who can recruit. I just think you can go about that in different ways. Like, Luke Yaklić was a defensive guy, but he also was very connected in Texas, Illinois, all these guys, and was a bigger time recruiter. DeAndre Haynes came in and was super young, but a bit inexperienced, but he also was a great recruiter, player development guy. So I think there's different boxes you can check off. I would say, I don't know, I'd put X's and O's at the top of the list, except for maybe one guy on the staff. And I would say player development and recruiting are probably bigger priorities.
So, Don, I gave you a chance ahead of time that this question was coming. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, but this is something that Jared and I have talked about a lot, you know, over the last year, and even going back to last week's episode. You know, we look at the incoming players. You asked me the other day if Trace Jackson Davis was maybe the best incoming player in the Big Ten, and, you know, maybe the freshman of the year potentially. You look around the Big Ten at recruiting, and it's not looking so great in terms of who's being brought in terms of five-star talent, McDonald's All-Americans. I think this year Trace is the only McDonald's All-American coming in. Last year it was Romeo, who's gone, and Jalen Smith, who returned to Maryland. And you also look at the fact that the Big Ten hasn't won a title since 2000. Is there any correlation in your mind between, you know, the Big Ten basically getting outworked on the trail by the SEC, the ACC, Big 12, Big East, and the fact that they haven't won a title in almost 20 years now?
Yeah, well, I think you look at the NBA draft, too, and how many SEC, ACC guys are being drafted in the first round. I think, what, it was Romeo and Jordan Poole were the only first-round picks in the Big Ten this year?
Yeah.
That definitely plays a part, and I don't know all of what the reasoning is. I think you can look at geography a bit, especially in Michigan. There just isn't as much of that talent that there used to be in the state when they were churning out multiple McDonald's All-Americans each year. So that plays at least some impact on it. Even like Ohio, like, so Indiana and Illinois are probably the two states that still kind of churn out that level of talent consistently in the Midwest. So that plays a part. Also, you look at some of just the way that the league plays could play a part. There's a reputation about how the Big Ten plays that just isn't the same in the SEC or the ACC. Do you need to get probably McDonald's All-Americans to win the whole thing? I would probably, right? I mean, you have to have a balance. And I think you see schools like Michigan State that kind of get close to that, right? You have a really kind of solid core, and then you bring in one or two All-Americans on top. But the hard part about recruiting All-Americans at this point is that you have to get new ones every year. So the Big Ten is almost becoming a more consistent league in the regular season, but at the same time might lack some of that star power to get you over the top in the end. I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. I don't know if maybe the ending the one and done would kind of change it a little bit. It's kind of hard to really gauge. And I guess we'll see if like hiring someone like Juwan Howard brings some of that influx of talent into the league. He's certainly going to try.
Do you think there's anything, you know, to the fact that, you know, and obviously not to cast any accusations at other schools or whatever, but it seems like the Big Ten maybe is a little bit more above board in terms of how maybe they do business in terms of recruiting. And do you think there's any validity in that? I mean, it's not something that we can kind of say for sure, but you know, you got a situation I think here where we're going to have some notice of allegations, I think, coming from the FBI stuff, and really to my knowledge, no Big Ten schools are involved in that. I mean, do you think there's any correlation there? Just, you know, you look at kind of how Michigan recruited under John Beilein, maybe the reason they weren't getting McDonald's All-Americans is because they weren't necessarily willing to wade into those waters. And across the league, it kind of just looks like, you know, it's a school like Wisconsin, the same thing, and kind of on down the list.
Yeah, well, I think you first look, and there's probably four or five schools that are going to get three or four McDonald's All-Americans every year. Duke's, Kentucky's, Kansas's, those type of schools, right? And they're basically recruiting at that level, and however they're getting them, but they're like operating at the top of the food chain, basically, right? I think you look at some of the middle tier schools in like the SEC or like LSU, right? They've been at all this controversy. The LSU level of schools in the Big Ten are much more, I would say, on the up and up than kind of that middle tier of schools in some of those middle leagues, right? So I think there's certainly validity to that. There's also maybe a academic component where some of the Big Ten schools probably outrank some of those Southern schools and might have different admissions processes, stuff like that. You can't look at the situation and say that's not, at least to an extent, what's going on. And I think the fact that those programs were all involved in this FBI investigation and none of the Big Ten schools were is pretty telling.
In terms of just Juwan Howard's potential to kind of reel in five-star talent, I mean, it remains to be seen, but do you expect, you know, it's under John Beilein, it was more of, hey, let's kind of just get players and develop them. Do you expect that Juwan Howard's approach is going to be a little bit more, let's go and try to swing for the fences and bring in the best talent and kind of, you know, in many ways emulate what, you know, the teams that he played on at Michigan, you know, they kind of had the best players on the court and won a lot of games because of their talent. I mean, do you kind of expect that to be the case moving forward for Michigan?
It certainly looks that way. He certainly seems like a guy who plans to win with talent before winning with scheme, considering that's what he's talked about more. His recruiting says that. And I think that's probably an easier way to win as a first-time head coach, right? I mean, he's not going to be John Beilein. He's not going to have this playbook that goes on as long as time. So that will be, you have to actually get those guys though. And what does that look like if you can't capitalize on those guys? I guess that's what we'll find out. But that's certainly the direction it looks like this is heading.
Last question for you, Dylan, and thanks for taking so much time with us today. Do you want to take a stab at an all Big Ten team looking out several months early? Cassius Winston obviously headlines it.
Oh boy, yeah. Cassius Winston would certainly be at the top of the pack. I would say he's the front runner for National Player of the Year. Beyond that, though, it gets a little dicey. I've never been a Lamar Stevens guy, but he's going to put up huge numbers, and he was already all Big Ten last year, I believe. So I'll vote for him, even though I wouldn't actually vote for him at the end of the year unless Penn State really proves me wrong. Joe Wieskamp, I think, is one of my favorite kind of – he was good last year, but I think he'll be a breakout star this year. it's too bad that Bohannon might be out, because Iowa could have been pretty fun to watch if he was playing. Anthony Cowan, we'll put him in there. Sort of boring old thing at this point, but he's been very productive for 3 years, and senior point guards are a luxury. How many is that? That's four.
And that's why guys go pro. You become a senior and you get called a boring old thing.
Yep. I would go with Dosunmu as my fifth one. Mm. I think Xavier Simpson probably in this mix, depending on how he goes. But what is interesting is that really all the kind of proven commodities in the league are point guards, right? You have Winston, Cowan, Dosunmu, and Simpson. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how those play out.
That's interesting. Interesting that you said Dosunmu, someone who was submitting their All Big Ten team for one of the preseason magazines, you know, kind of asked us to look over it, and he had Xavier Simpson over Dosunmu. And my argument was, you know, Simpson's great, but a lot of his perceived value has been based on winning. And if they're not winning quite as much, if his assists aren't quite as high, will he still get that level of respect to be an All Big Ten guy?
Yeah, and that is going to be, I would honestly say, I just don't think Simpson has the same kind of ceiling when you look at it from the preseason that a guy like Dosunmu has. You could see Simpson topping Cowan, though, also, right? Like, yeah, if you look at it that way. Jalen Smith will probably get some kind of preseason buzz there.
I think Tillman and maybe Caleb Wesson could be in that, because Ohio State's going to be, I think, one of the top two or three teams. So unless they're just going to do it by having, you know, pretty balanced production, it seems like to me that Wesson's going to be like their go-to guy. But I mean, I know you're not as high on him as
I'm not a big Caleb Wesson guy.
Yeah. But, I think IU fans, after watching him destroy the Hoosiers for the last couple of years, might not have any qualms if he's in there. The other guy I think that, you know, could be in the conversation, which I think is maybe a little bit optimistic, is Travion Williams. You know, Andy Katz had him, I think, in a list of top 25 players in college basketball already for next season, which I thought was maybe a little optimistic, but he's interesting to me.
Someone's got to step up and score points for them. I mean,
I'd take Xavier Tillman above both of those post players. I think he's going to have a really big year and emerge as a first round pick type of guy. I think.
How about Georgie?
Yeah, I guess they have to share the interior load a little bit with Coffee Cockburn coming in, right? So that'll be interesting. But I love Georgie too. I mean, Illinois is my team. They replaced Indiana for the 2020 season.
Okay.
Apologies in advance to Illinois fans.
If an Indiana player is going to make it, who do you think it would be? If an Indiana player makes like third team All Big Ten, who would be your guess is the most likely option?
Jerome Hunter, if he plays.
I think Devontae Green, if he
he's gonna put up some points.
He's gonna put up some shots, I'll tell you that.
Yes, he is. And he's got the further line now to shoot from, which he's very excited about. So we'll see. It's, you know, there's always unexpected things that happen in the Big Ten. So it'll be interesting to watch it all play out. Dylan, thanks so much for joining us. UMHoops.com. I know it's a Michigan site, but I always end up subscribing during the season because you guys, your breakdowns of the IU-Michigan games are always good, and there's just always good content for a Big Ten fan there. So check out UMHoops.com, and of course, subscribe to the Moving Screen podcast because those guys do a great job.
Thank you.
Absolutely. All right. We will talk to you guys next week. Take care. Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. Remember to join me and my co-hosts for more IU basketball talk at assemblycall.com and visit Alex over at insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana basketball. If you want to support Podcast on the Brink, here is the single best way to do it. Tell anyone you know who loves IU hoops about us and suggest that they subscribe. Podcast on the Brink can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else podcasts are available. Tell your social media followers, email your friends, text your family members. For weekly discussion about IU basketball, they need to be subscribed to Podcast on the Brink. We'll talk to you next time. Go Hoosiers.